Hello, this is A Mexican Crossing Lines. Welcome to A Mexican Crossing Lines. This is Cindy Gomez-Shemp.
And this is Duke Gomez-Shemp.
And you're listening to KPPPLP 88.1 Fargo-Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. And we're also broadcasting online through Shoutcast, so you can go to kpppfm.com and listen live. Today, I have a very special guest in studio, Lissa Yellowbird Chase. And she is the founder of Sanish Scouts, an organization based out of the three affiliated tribes, which are in the heart of the Bakken. Sanish Scouts advocates and helps to find missing and murdered people. Thank you for being on our show today, Lissa.
Thank you for having me.
So I'd like you to introduce yourself and tell me more about your background and where you live. And we're going to be talking today about Standing Rock and a bunch of other things surrounding that, including your life. So give us a little bit of background of who you are.
Okay, well, I'm Lissa, as you know, and I did found a organization called Sanish Scouts, and I also work and live here in Fargo. I work as a welder for True North Steel during the week, and on the weekends, my children and other people in our organization go out to find murdered and missing individuals. That stemmed from the height of the oil industry, where people begin missing for unknown reasons at that time. So we just did what we could to try and support families that were out of state who were suffering from economic hardship and couldn't come to the Bakken to look for their loved ones. So we did it the best we could for them.
Now, I've been following your work for a while. You are a tough, tough lady. And I admire you greatly because you're like one of the hardest working women I know, fueled only by coffee and your resolve, I think. but what's really remarkable to me is how long you've been doing it and with really very few resources. What drives you, besides the coffee, I mean?
Well, nicotine and coffee really help. Well, it started off with just feel as a mother, you know. One of the first cases we had was for Casey Clark, who went missing in the Bakken. And we never did recover his remains, but there were people that were held accountable. James Henriksen, who spearheaded the whole idea to murder and conceal Casey's body, is serving two life sentences plus 30 years. So some of the work we've done has been just to find some resolve for these families with so many questions. So that stemmed from being a mother myself. If my child was missing, this is what I would want, you know, I would want to do. Now, like I said before, we have, you know, we're in the oil region, so we have money here. We have jobs. Our job, you know, our jobless rate is way low compared to the rest of the United States. So I've just done what I could with the resources I have to try and support these families who don't have as much opportunity as we have here. And that's about it, you know.
It's truly a labor of love. I mean, it is heartbreaking work that you do, but it is truly a labor of love. And I think that folks that want to get a hold of you and learn more about your work, you can find Sanish Scouts, S-A-H-N-I-S-H, Scouts, on Facebook. You can also email Alyssa at sanishscouts@gmail.com. And we're going to talk about one of the most important news stories, probably one of the most remarkable Indigenous history stories in our lifetime in the last 100 years, which is happening at Standing Rock right now over the Dakota Access Pipeline. And we're going to talk a lot about what has been happening at the Sacred Stone Camp, because you've been there a lot. I think people need to hear from the people that are actually at the camp instead of just what they see in the news or what they hear on social media. And also we're going to talk about recent actions, especially the increase in militarization of the Morton County Sheriff's Department and the bringing in of Army National Guard, the presence now of G4S, and FBI. And we will also talk about the, you know, what's happening to other people that are sharing these stories in the national media, that are getting these stories out there, like Shailene Woodley, like Amy Goodman. So we're going to cover a lot of these topics. And of course, we always want to hear what folks out there have to say about this or other topics that we bring up on A Mexican Crossing Line.
Yeah, you can definitely get a hold of us in many ways. One way is you can actually call our call-in line at 701-566-0917. Again, that number is 701-566-0917. It's a message line, so just leave your name, where you live, and leave us a brief message. You know, we may play it on the air because you're being recorded. Also, you can tweet us at @media_PPP. You can email Cindy at kpppfm.com or me, Duke at kpppfm.com. To keep up with what we're doing and seeing what shows we are playing, you can follow us on Facebook at 88.1 FM Fargo-Moorhead, the People's Press Project, and Mexi-Ken.
Now, the reason that I invited you is because, well, I follow you on Facebook, and but I've also seen you speaking about what's going on at the Sacred Stone Camp. You're not shy. Let's just start there.
Oh, most definitely not.
You're not shy about how you feel about things. You feel comfortable speaking out publicly about injustices or problems that you see. And I think you have a lot of really important information to share with the public, especially about breaking misconceptions from everything about what the camp needs as it's winterizing to what's really going on there in terms of danger or threat levels to the public, or the news stories that have been put out recently about ranchers in the area living in fear and carrying weapons. Mm-hmm. So I thought, who better to invite on the show to talk about these things than Lyssa? So let's start there. First, you've been going to the camp. Tell folks what it's like at the camp and tell them about some of these misconceptions that you feel that they don't know about.
Well, what I know about the camp and from my experience, I'll tell you about the first time I went there. I came in from the north side on 1806. And no, I'm sorry, six.
Okay.
Because we were rerouted.
Right, right.
And that was kind of alarming in itself, being rerouted by the local sheriff's office. We asked, like, what's going on? Why are we being rerouted? As we watched a white family drive through before us. And so we questioned them, and they didn't really have too much to offer for an explanation other than the fact that, well, where are you going? And we had a boat, like resources. You're talking about resources. We don't have like a trailer to haul our stuff back and forth, but we do have a search boat. So we took the motor off and threw all our stuff in the boat just to get more of our material out there. And so we went through on the boat with the boat, and we asked them, why can't we go through? They just went through. Why can't we go through? Right. And he says, well, where are you going? Well, my adopted brother, Rick, who has been on the Casey case with me since the beginning, was driving, and he's non-Indian. And when the guy asked, where are you going? I said, tell him we're going to Lake Oahu. We're going to go camping. And so the guy goes, well, there is no camping overnight there, but, you know, the park is open. And he said, well, can we just go down there and check it out then? And the guy, and when he heard me coaching Rick on what to say, he looks down, saw me, and he said, because it sounded like he was going to negotiate, you know, like, oh, we'll let you down, maybe come back, something like that. A second officer comes up, and they both look at, you know, lean down because they couldn't see who the passenger was. When they leaned down and looked at me, they said, oh, no, you're going that way, which was the detour route.
So they recognized you then?
Well, obviously recognized that I was a person of color, and there was no negotiating, you know, going down 1806 at that point. So they gave us a map, and they told us that it would be like 10 extra miles, when in fact it was like 30 extra minutes.
Wow.
We didn't check the mileage, but it was about an additional 30-minute drive to get to the camp. But when we came down the hill and around the bend, and it was evening time, it was past dusk, but not quite dark. And when we saw all the tents and the fires, and we could hear the music coming, you know, we were coming down that incline, and we just stopped. We stopped everybody behind us. I mean, we just stopped and cried. It was just the energy was so overwhelming. The unity, the spirits, the magic was, it was on. And we just sat there in amazement and in awe. It was like, wow, you know. And after we were able to get a hold of ourselves, we went down and we got to the front gate, and they said, have you ever been here before? And they gave us a little pamphlet kind of explaining the different camp areas and different things like that. We started going, we could see the flags, and we were just like, oh my God, look at all these flags. We thought on that occasion there was a lot of flags. You should see it now.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's like, wow. Every weekend I go, there's like, I mean, the flags are just everywhere, all the nations that have showed up. So we got there, we set up a tent, and, you know, by that time it was dark. We set up our tent, we all just piled in, you know, called it good for the night. But while we were laying there, we could hear a round dance, you know, what in the area of what I now know as the Red Warrior Camp. Mm-hmm. They were having a round dance over there, and to our left on the other side, there was peyote songs coming from a teepee, and then there was some guy with a hand drum over by the tree line, and he was just singing, you know, on his own, and you could just hear the music, and you could hear the different styles and the different tribes, you know, and it was just so awesome. And to fall asleep to that the first night was just like, I mean,
like medicine.
It was. I mean, it was so healing. And so, you know, we stayed up as long as we could. You know, and next, you know, I'm waking up, you know, there's dew on my eyebrows. And I'm like, I reach over, I got my coffee cup on standby. I sit up, and Rick looks at me, and he goes, where are you going? I said, I'm finding a bathroom and some coffee. And he's like, good luck. Uh-huh. For some reason, I knew I would not have a problem, you know. Grab my coffee cup, hit the bathroom. I started walking from the little latrine area up to the main area where they, you know, do announcements and stuff like that. And the first camp next to the bathroom, they saw me with a coffee cup, and they were like, hey, good morning, how are you? And where are you from? What's your name? You know, and I was like, oh, do you have coffee? And they're like, here, come here, let's fill, you know. Oh, wow. Gave me the whole fixings like you did, you know, coffee, cream, everything, you know, morning hug even, you know, it was like, it was so amazing. So we sat there, introduced ourselves, and I thought, okay, I'm not trying to be rude, but I need more coffee than this. So I started making my way up to the main area, and do you not know, I mean, I was stopped so many times along the way, Not that it was a bother or anything. I was just so amazed. People were like, hey, good morning. How are you? You know, where are you from? And you just heard that. It took me, I would say maybe 150 yards. Took me about 40 minutes to get there because of all the welcomes, all the hugs, all the good mornings.
You don't go very far in the camp.
Oh, my goodness. You know, and it was just like, yeah. I couldn't believe it. So I finally get up there. And by that time, I had so much coffee already, I didn't even need to fill, you know. And so I get up there, I'm looking around, I'm looking at all these people, and it was just so amazing. They had it so organized, and, you know, the security was there. They were present. They were doing their job, you know, from what my experience in security, they were on top of their game.
Yeah.
And you had the announcers kind of giving ideas like, hey, we need people in the kitchen. We need this. We need that. And people were just getting up and literally running over to help.
Wow.
Now, when do you ever see that? You know, Hey, we need guys to haul boxes in, and it's like pulling teeth, you know, anywhere else. People were jumping up, running to assist, and it was just like, I just stood there in amazement, and then I thought, you know what? You need to go get Rick and show him what he's missing, you know? So I run back down to the tent, and I'm like, you got to get up. You got to get up. You got to come look at this. This is just amazing. And then we went through the whole process, taking 40 minutes to get to the main area again. And we were just awed, you know? And like I said, he's non-Indian, and he hasn't really experienced the ceremonial part of our ways, you know? But one thing that I don't want to forget was the diversity there. Yes, there was all different nations. And I mean that in its true meaning. There were, you know, there were Asian people there. There were people from Australia. There, I mean, other countries. There was Mexican Indian. There was Mexicans. There was South Americans. There, you know, Black Lives Matter founder was there. We did the water ceremony. Everyone was present. Everyone. This is not, you know, and I've said this since the beginning, this is not a native issue. Mm-mm. This is a human issue. This is a water issue, and we need this to survive, you know, just to make mankind go forward. We need that. And so it was just, that first day was just so amazing. I mean, it's like it was a milestone in my life. You know what I mean? And no, I didn't put that on Facebook as a milestone. But, I mean, it was. It was. And so I've encouraged other people to go ahead and like, come down. You know, before you see or hear or accept any of this propaganda from anybody or any news reporter, come down and see for yourself. You make the call, you know. And every, you know, I've told people, I told my nephew's girlfriend, I said, hey, if you come down there, and she's a Mexican girl, Latina girl. Mm-hmm. And,
it's okay to say Mexican.
If you, I said, if you come down there, I said that power is going to grab your soul, mm-hmm. and you're going to be bawling like a baby. Yep. And I told that to Tony too. And, you know, he showed up, and then he came the next time with her, and I was walking to the camp, and he pulls up, and he's like, hey, you were right. It got her. And I'm like, what happened? What are you talking? And I look, and his girlfriend is just bawling. And he said, remember what you said? It got her. And I said, I'm not even playing about that. I mean, there's just so much power, good vibes, good energy, and healing, actual healing that, you know, I just keep telling everybody, just come and check it out for yourself.
It's hard to explain. It is very hard to explain. I've had these same conversations, and without fail, every single time I have been there and I've asked people about their experience, they break down into tears talking about it. It's that transformative and that powerful every single time.
Yeah, there's no words to describe that. You know, you could say, oh, it's a spiritual event. I'm sorry. That doesn't even come close to describing. You have to experience it.
You really do. And that's why I think it's so unfortunate that what we have seen for the most part in the mainstream media have been either biased stories or outright lies. I mean, some of the stories bear no resemblance to the truth of what is going on. Like, for example, the one that came out the day that Shailene Woodley was arrested. The Indigenous Peoples Day, which was on Monday. Mm-hmm. The day, I guess, the morning after the judges made the decision to lift the injunction and to allow the construction company to continue their work. However, the Department of the Interior and the Department of Justice and the Army Corps of Engineers had asked that the company voluntarily continue to halt that work. And yet, apparently they've decided that's not going to happen. But what was on the video of most of the people that were there that I got to see, not just Shailene Woodley's, but other people's vantage points. I saw no violence. I didn't see anything that was even remotely close to what Sheriff Laney said was a riot, and that they were involved in a riot. And we had a conversation about this in our last program. We were talking about, what does this mean? Why is the governor of the state calling the Army National Guard? Why is a lieutenant governor saying there are hundreds of crimes are being happening down there, or hundreds of laws are being violated? And why is the Morton County Sheriff's Department sending out MRAPs and armed riot police? And now even, you know, creating this task force among different states to bring in sheriffs. Why is this even happening? And we shared our insight on this. Why don't you share with me what you think of what's going on? Why do you think this is happening?
Well, now, just to back up a second, there were a few videos posted by KFYR where some of the protectors did use some language towards...
Cussing isn't illegal, is it?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay, I mean, I just wondered.
It could be offensive, but I don't think it's a crime. Mm-hmm. but they were using some language towards KFYR. Mm-hmm. And also the issue of taking the camera. Now, what I have seen time and time again, it would not surprise me for one second that KFYR would do something like this, is when we have ceremonial moments during our prayer time and, mm-hmm. and ceremony time, we ask everybody mm-hmm. there who is present to be respectful. Please turn your cameras off. Don't even bring them down there. Mm-hmm. This is a very, and we trust this. You know what I mean? This is who we are. This is our very being, is our spirituality. And so we don't record those kinds of things. So my guess, you know, because there's been a few who have kind of tested the waters. And like I said, I wouldn't put it past KFYR to do something like this. Refuse to turn their cameras off because they're in it for a good show. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure, you know, I'm making an assumption, but I'm when I get down there this weekend, I will, you know, verify my assumption here is that KFYR probably chose not to turn their cameras off. Now, of course, people are going to get angry about that. We ask you respectfully to please turn those off. And obviously they didn't abide by that. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm sure that did, you know, host some anger there. Mm-hmm. And some obscenities, but I didn't see anybody being hit or threatened or, you know, any physical violence taking place. Mm-mm. So it's all a matter of perception.
And speaking of perception, KFYR's perception among the campers at Sacred Stone isn't very good, because they've been putting out a lot of news stories that the people there feel are a complete misrepresentation. Exactly. Of what's going on. So there's some trust lost there. Is there not?
There is. And it's been that way. I mean, in years past, when KFYR and other people and other agencies, mind you, most of the state 20 mm-hmm. years ago would say, Lissa Yellowbird Chase, a enrolled member of the three affiliated tribes or something to that effect. And it's like, when I was a UND student, I would say, what about, you know, Joe Blow, the Norski? Why aren't we putting that in there?
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's put some descriptive things about, you know, these people, you know, a second descendant, you know, from Norway, or, you know, Eagle Bush or whatever, you know, wherever they came sure. from. Let's, you know, and that just goes to show you when you confront people about that, they get defensive.
Yeah.
But they don't see the other side from our vantage point either. You mm-hmm, know, it just mm-hmm. shows you how egocentric these people are. And it's embedded in their every fiber.
And it's not just that the media needs to be more culturally sensitive, if you will. I hate that word, but you know what I mean? It's beyond that, because I've been to Standing Rock many times as a media person with my crew. And we always have to identify ourselves at the gate. Every single time we've gone there, we've had to identify ourselves at the gate. We're not allowed to enter. We are rerouted to the media tent, where every single time, regardless of whether you've been there before or not, you are reoriented as to what's going on in the camp, which is good because there's always something new going on. You know, there was like, well, now we have a school over there and you can't film anywhere near there. You know, so they tell you,
mm-hmm.
They remind you, you know, very politely, but very clearly what you can film and what you cannot film and how you're supposed to conduct yourself in the camp. And they make it clear that there are people that are monitoring anyone that has cameras, anyone that is media, that you're supposed to identify yourself as media everywhere you go and ask for permission, which is why... When I heard about Scott Henin's little report of going out there, I wondered whether or not he even identified himself. Did you hear about this?
Oh, yes, I did.
Okay. Well, we're gonna take a quick musical break, and we're gonna talk about this right after the break. Thank you for listening to A Mexican Crossing Lines. We'll be right back.
There's a battle raging on the sacred land. Our brothers and sisters had to take a stand against us now for what we all been doing. On the sacred land, there's a battle brewing. I wish somebody and you know what that means. Yeah, that's when Happy went to jail. Behind big money, justice always fails.
Hello, folks. This is Cindy Gomez-Shemp.
And this is Duke Gomez-Shemp.
And you're listening to A Mexican Crossing Lines on KPPP-LP 88.1 Fargo-Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. You can also listen to us online on Shoutcast at kpppfm.com. And today, again, I am introducing Lissa Yellowbird Chase. She is, in full disclosure, a friend that I've known for a while. I've been following her work. Lissa does a lot of advocacy work for missing and murdered people, specifically in the Bakken. She is the founder of Sanish Scouts, an organization that's based out of the three affiliated tribes, which is right there in the heart of the Bakken. And you can find more about that organization by looking them up, Sanish Scouts on Facebook. It's S-A-H-N-I-S-H Scouts. And you can also email them at sanishscouts@gmail.com. Thank you once again for coming and speaking to me about this very important issue. So let's talk about what we were talking about, the media specifically, right?
Right.
And we said that there was KFYR, there was some issues, that the story that was put out by them, many stories that people have had issue with that they've been putting out. Prominently featured on the Morton County Sheriff's Department Facebook page, by the way.
I saw that.
And then you also have the story of Scott Hennen, which, according to the story, it's a bunch of pictures. He said that he went down to the camp and he thanked some kind of an officer, state trooper, for escorting him onto the camp, or... I found that kind of odd because, how many other media do you know of that went down there with the police escort?
I don't know. That's the first I heard. Obviously, he must have felt threatened to even go there.
It's strange because I don't know that anybody ever saw him at the camp. There was no, you know, information that I think he might have just filmed from the vehicle. And then I wondered too, and I heard about the report from Myron Dewey that he followed some people out of camp that were driving around taking photos from their vehicle. And it turned out that it was a police vehicle.
Yes.
And I was like, Myron said that he saw some people sitting in the back and they were high-fiving and laughing. And he said that, you know, they didn't identify themselves as police. They didn't identify who they were. And then to see the next day all of these pictures... Specifically, they were taking pictures around the school, too. That was one of the things he said. Mm-hmm. And then there's a story in the Bismarck Tribune about how the Indians are running unaccredited schools down there.
Yeah.
Like they're looking for these horrible crimes that are being committed.
Yeah.
Native people are teaching their own children. How dare they?
Oh, exactly. And heaven forbid you should use culturally relevant material. Yeah. We wouldn't want that.
So I find a lot of that stuff really interesting because Democracy Now! Has been down to the camp. The Young Turks have been down to the camp. KPPPLP has been down to the camp. KFGO has been down to the camp. I mean, there's been a lot of different, you know, High Plains Readers had people down at the camp almost every weekend for three or four weeks now. So people can go down to the camp. Media can go down to the camp. They don't need a police escort. The fact that certain media is being prominently featured on the Morton County Sheriff's Department's page, in among them, Scott Hennen and KFYR. Yes. What do you make of the the militarization by Morton County, the kinds of things that are coming out of the sheriff's department, that they're saying about the riots and all sorts of weird things. And what you've seen, what you've experienced, and what you've heard about what's been going on.
Well, it definitely will tell you that there are, you know, and a lot of people don't realize this, and I have to tell this over and make it very clear to people who are interested in coming to the camp. There are three separate locations there. There's the camp, and there's actually more than one camp. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't realize that. Not only you got the camping area, but you have the protectors / protest site. And then you have the front line.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, unless you've been there, you don't realize that these are like 3 to 4 miles apart from each other, mm-hmm. you know, and the camps are like, the official Sacred Stone camp is quite a ways from the, I can't even say that.
Red Warrior camp or the Ojeti Sakoan camp?
Yeah. You say it Ojeti better than I do. and I'm Lakota. Anyway, so a lot of people don't know that there's this distinct area, you know, differences here. They think it's all grouped into one, just kind of like they're grouping the people together. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Let's mm-hmm. go figure. But anyway, so, you know, like you said, a lot of media has been there. There's been a lot of freelance media, too, that I know of. I've had people follow us with Center Scouts on some of the different searches we've done, and they've actually come out with us. They've done some freelance, you know, journalism, different ones for New York Times and different entities like that. And so Chris Hennin, I guess, my opinion of that.
You mean Scott? Chris is his brother.
Yes,
I'm he was Scott. Recently in the media, oh, too. He had sexual assault
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, that's a whole nother.
But that's a different guy.
Another issue.
Yeah. A whole other issue. Well, you know, sexual assault is a real issue that's being faced by people, and sex trafficking by people
right.
in the Bakken.
And you know I'm up all on that, too. That's yeah. a whole nother.
That's a whole other issue.
And a whole nother show.
Yeah.
But anyway, Scott obviously had come there with some real negative means if he felt the need to have protection. You know what I mean? Who does that? I mean, you didn't even step foot into the camp and already you have, what, undercover or whatever coming with you. That really shows where your mindset is. And then you're going to have county-sponsored, you know, Laney's endorsing your work because you're there to support, you know, their miscalculated riot scheme, and you know,
and that was Laney who announced that. He was their point man, he said.
Well, and what I'm saying is Laney, obviously Kirkle Dinker, has he's kind of fried himself. He's made some very uneducated, just misconstrued remarks, and he's already made himself look unreliable. But for them to take him out of the scene, okay, now we're talking about politics, you know what I mean? We're not going to take him out of the scene and replace him.
Oh, no, of course not.
So to speak, because that would make them look like there was wrongdoing,
mm-hmm.
right? So let's get Laney to show this support. So he's coming in, you know, he's got his guns and his big boots strapped up. He's ready to roll, making all kinds of accusations. And, you know, just making bad judgment calls. I didn't see a riot either. You know, I saw a riot being perpetrated the day they sicked the dogs on us, though.
Yeah.
I was there. I was on the front lines. And nobody did anything about that.
Yeah, where was the Morton County Sheriff's then?
Where were they? You know where? I have pictures. And I will post this on your Facebook page.
Cool.
There were three or four Morton County sheriffs lining the ditch to the north end of that area.
They were watching?
They were watching the whole thing. I have pictures of this.
Wow.
They never once got off their cars. They never once approached the crowd.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think from where they were, from their vantage point, that they could see the dogs being sicked on people? Could they hear
yes.
the people screaming?
I took a picture from the vantage point of where the dogs were being sicked on people. Right wow. at the fence line. Yeah. So, I mean, They obviously were there. They didn't try to intervene, you know. And if you've been on my page, you see that I have posted more than one time the police officer's code of conduct. If you see wrongdoing, you have taken an oath to protect the people. Mm-hmm. Now you see these dogs being sicked on elders and children and women, mm-hmm. and you never once got out of your car.
And the pepper spray. I mean, when they pepper sprayed, they pepper sprayed a line of women.
Yeah.
Right in the face.
Yes.
I watched that and it was like, what?
Mm-hmm.
It was crazy because they were literally praying and begging for this desecration of the land to stop. They were crying.
And those people were basically, they were laying in wait for us to come up to the site. Once we approached the fence line, they came out of nowhere with all these dogs. And it was like, what are you going to do with that thing? Mm-hmm. I asked the female, what are you going to do with that thing? Come here, boy, you know. And I told the dog to come here. Uh-huh. He got up, he walked around her and sat behind her. And then she took the dog down to the other location where he started biting people.
Wow.
But you could tell that these dogs didn't want to be there. I have a dog.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why aren't these people being charged with abuse of an animal? You know what I mean? There's a lot of things that went wrong in that whole situation. Very poor judgment. And that's another thing with Kirkheimer or whatever his name is. And Lainey.
Is it Kirchmeier or Kirkmeier?
Who cares?
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, you know.
Yeah, let's get to Lainey. What about Lainey?
Because
when I saw him, I'm like, when I was driving down there and
what are
every
you
other
doing
car,
there?
Fargo police are there.
Yes.
Have you seen the Fargo squad
yes.
cars? They're driving
yes.
all around. I'm like, I thought I just arrived at Standing Rock. Am I back in Fargo? Did I go through a time warp?
And it's clear that they don't even know where the jurisdictional boundaries are.
No.
Okay. It's like, whoa, you're opening a can of worms.
I heard that a Fargo squad car followed Myron Dewey
yes.
onto reservation land.
Yeah. Yes.
What's going on?
Obviously, they do not know what the parameters here are. You know, they're set on a mission. You got a couple bulldogs and they're running for a can elbow, mm-hmm. you know, and they're just running.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even know where their jurisdiction lies or, you know, when it ends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sure, if you saw somebody committing a felony, of course you'd be able to pursue that, you know, as a citizen.
Mm-hmm.
But they need to learn the legal. They're not training these officers right. And that's the whole thing. It's all about, and law enforcement talks about this, the use of discretion. Okay? That in itself, we have issues with that, and it's obvious. North Dakota doesn't have a clear understanding of what discretion is, at least their law enforcement, and probably most of our politicians, too.
Well, the prosecutor, you know, we got to talk about this. The prosecutor, Ladd Erickson, says he's going to charge Amy Goodman of Democracy Now! With a felony, I think, trespass, because he doesn't consider her to be any different from any of the other trespassers. She doesn't qualify in his eyes as a journalist because, according to him, I believe he said almost exactly, I'm paraphrasing here, that her story, her entire story was pro-protesters or, you know, anti-DAPL,
which is then secondarily kind of effective of limiting what the press, freedom of the press,
mm-hmm.
right? They're oppressing the press. That story didn't jive and didn't support what we're illegally doing. So we're going to count you as one of them, no?
Yeah, you're not part of the press.
You know what I mean? So do they have something in their county or city code that supersedes state or federal law when it comes to journalists or the press? I doubt it.
It sounds really weird.
I bet you
weird.
It will be next year, though.
I think it's really weird because on the one hand, we just talked about how Morton County Sheriff is prominently featuring story by KFYR. And by the way, in the video of Shailene Woodley's that I watched, the live feed, that kerfuffle happened on her live feed where they were walking up to the people there. And she was paying attention to the whole thing. And she said, I think that's a reporter. I think I've seen him before. I think he's done some good stories or some good interviews. And the people there were saying, no, he has to leave. He was filming when he was asked not to. And I heard someone say, yeah, they print a bunch of BS, you know. So they had very legitimate reasons why. They weren't just, you know, who are you? And then, you know, acting in a threatening manner. They knew who this person was. They identified him as part of the media that was harassing people at the camp. And they actually put a call out specifically for KFYR, which I reported on yesterday, where they said, water defenders need to be protected. White allies, we ask you to come in white jackets and stand in front of KFYR and block them from recording anything that is prohibited and from, you know, videotaping water defenders, because apparently the Morton County Sheriff's Departments and law enforcement are using their footage to charge people with crimes, as are the Sheriff's Department. You know, they're filming the people at these actions and trying to charge them.
So they're considered journalists because they're benefiting Morton County and their agenda?
It would seem that way, because Amy Goodman, her story did not, it's not considered journalism. That's not journalism. Because it's...
Well, I'll tell you, I was out there with Amy Goodman, okay? I seen her walk out, and she was almost on the verge of tears. She was in so much shock. She was like, oh my God, you know, and she kept looking around, and she wasn't the only one. But she stuck out because, first of all, she was a non-Indian, and she just looked in complete duress, like... Like, and I ran up to her and I said, are you okay? Because I didn't know if she was going to faint or, you know what I mean? It looked that vital.
White folks are not used to seeing how Indigenous people are treated, especially by
the authorities. No, they're not. And it's such a surprise, but you know what? This happens all the time.
It does.
You know, which brings me to the point, and I'm just going to throw this in just for a little feed here, is when they did the studies of, you know, Black Lives Matter and, you know, people who are killed while in custody of the police or corrections, you know who the main person falling victim, the main race falling victim to law enforcement and corrections is Native Americans. Yeah. You know, but we're so used to taking, you know, sitting back and being bullied for such a long time that we've put up with it. And they're used to our... You know, society is used to our, you know, our lackadaisical.
The continued genocide. It's like we're used to seeing it and people are used to accepting it. I've been not just shocked by the way that the police are reacting, but the way that people in who most of them are white people that have never been down there. I wonder if they're all just internet trolls planted there by pro-Dapple people. I don't know. But they've said some horrible, horrible things. Everything from calling for a happy American horse to be cut from the machine with the bone saw, and just awful things. I don't even want to repeat them because they're so traumatic. Mm-hmm. About continuing the genocide on Native people. And I don't know if it was deliberate what they did on Indigenous Peoples Day. If they are doing this to kind of, you know, shove the knife in and twist it a little harder to show their dominance, or their supremacy over us, but it feels like it couldn't possibly be that all of the authorities and all of the politicians in the state of North Dakota have no context and no clue of the history of the state of North Dakota against Indigenous people here. I can't imagine that they're that ignorant. What do you
think?
They
are.
Do you think that they're that ignorant?
A lot of them are. They're used to us sitting back and taking it. You know, and how dare you stand up now? Mm-hmm. How dare you? We're used to you not fighting back. Yeah. You know, and you have the audacity to confront me and call my actions, you know, wrong. Who do you think you are? You know, and that's why you're seeing all this hate propaganda on social media. You know, you Indians get back to this or get your free checks. You know, and it's like, oh my gosh, people, how many of you are actually, how many of your kids are on free or reduced hot lunches?
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I will bet you my oil tax revenue from my tribe is paying for that. Mm-hmm. You know, how many of you have driven on a road? You know what I mean? I bet you our oil revenue tax money that the state got, we didn't have to go for that. Mm-hmm. But they made a lot of money and they blew it.
Mm-hmm.
They blew it. And North Dakota got used to spending, you know, they were writing checks that they didn't even have money in the bank for anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like a bad casino habit. Mm-hmm. And now that we are on a downtime, everyone's in a panic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that to the point that they're selling us out to corporate, you know, corporate bullies. You know,
out of state corporate bullies. Right. They're not even from here.
And using, I mean, we heard a farmer come down and apologize in the circle. And he said, you know, they're running that pipeline through our land. And I'm so embarrassed to be here, but I wanted to come down here and let you guys know that they used eminent domain. And I was just like, wow. You know, and he was just walking around apologizing to people. And I'm just like, is this guy like a setup? Did Dapl send him in? But he had his wife and his kids with him. I mean, wow. who would jeopardize the safety of their family by bringing the whole family? And he just said, you know, I don't know if I'm welcome here.
Wow. That's strange. Because, you know, and it's crazy if you juxtapose it to the stories that they're telling in the media that all the ranchers are scared. They're scared of the water defenders and they're packing heat. Everybody's carrying a gun.
Did you see those videos, though? Did you see those videos? Those had to have been some hidden cameras from KFYR, because the one dork guy
mm-hmm.
who was running, you know, his story of pain and anguish,
mm-hmm.
They didn't even keep the camera on him. I don't know if they have really bad camera people at KFYR, but that was kind of telling me that this was like a hidden camera maybe. And they were just because,
or maybe they wanted to make it look that way.
Why would these farmers, if they were that scared, put their faces on social media?
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
You know what I mean? Oh, I'm terrified, but hey, here's my face. And then we're going to let KFYR drive by my mailbox so you can get the numbers and see exactly where I live.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't make any sense.
You know what I'm saying? So I wouldn't be surprised if KFYR is not getting some phone calls from some really angry farmers and saying, dude, you never had my permission to do that.
That would be illegal, I think. Well, I mean, who knows?
There's a lot of things in North Dakota that go uncontested.
Yes, that's true. This is something, you know, and as a paralegal, I try to tell people this all the time. People ask me, is that legal? Can they do that? And I'm like, as long as something isn't enforced, it doesn't matter whether or not a law exists. If it's not enforced, doesn't matter. And we have a lot of things happening in terms of the security of the people. The people have reported warrantless searches, false arrests, harassment, profiling, and even these low air flights with
the false drones flag.
Yeah, no, with the false flag numbers on the helicopters.
Oh, yes, yes.
That are being investigated now by the FAA. So there's a lot of activity that is being reported.
MZ devices.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. So you've experienced some of this. In the last 10 minutes that we have, I wanted to talk about what are people facing? How can people that want to go down to the camp keep themselves safe? What kinds of things can they expect in terms of blocking of Facebook, of their signal issues that they might have? How do they need to dress? What do they need to donate to the camp? Tell me how people can help the camp, best support the camp, being there or not being there.
Well, and they've been saying, you know, if you're going to come, to be an observer or a part-time supporter. And I'm not going to lie, I'm a part-time supporter. I only go down on the weekends. I come back to Fargo during the week, and I put in my time. And during the week, I try to gather up donations, whatever I can, to help, you know, my contacts out there. So they say to be, if you're going to come on the, be a weekend warrior, then come and be self-sufficient. Because they already kind of got their hands full. You know, it's a lot of people to feed. So, I mean, if you're going to come, be self-sufficient and maybe be a little prepared to help somebody next door to you, mm-hmm. you know, because there's people that, you know, do show up. I've seen people come in hitchhiking.
Yeah.
You know, from across the United States. They're like, we heard about this and we just needed to be here. The last visit I was there, some girl from Alaska
wow.
flew into Bismarck and then caught a ride out to Sacred Stone Camp. And I don't know why I have this high affinity for people, but I must just stand out because they come running to me and they're like, hey, I'm just here. You know, I don't know where I'm. I don't know where to go. I don't know.
Can you help me?
You know, and I'm like, okay, look, here's the boards. Here's the information boards. This is what you do. And if, you know, go up to the announcer, tell them that you're here for service work and they'll find something for you to do. So anyway, that's kind of how that goes. As far as helping out there, they're really getting ready for winter.
Yeah.
Now the clothes, we don't need clothes out there. There's piles and piles and piles of clothes, but what they do need in that clothing area is, our frontline warriors, Carhartts.
Yeah.
It's cold out there. Mm-hmm. Now this weekend's going to be nice. So it'd be a nice weekend to try and, you know, do some prep work for the winter. Socks,
yeah.
Any kind of winter boots, gloves, headgear,
mm-hmm.
Things of that nature. That's what's really needed out there. Any kind of food, donations, I'm sure would be fine. They're trying to go green a little. They don't want all that paper and,
right.
and styrofoam. So like they accept like dishes, silverware. I know silverware was really, I mean, if you need a new thing of silverware and you got two missing and you're OCD like me and that's not going to work for you,
mm-hmm.
go buy a new one and then give them your old one. So, and then they're taking donations for winter living.
Mm-hmm.
The tents, the teepees, building materials, things of that nature.
Yeah, I heard they want Lowe's cards.
Huh?
Lowe's cards.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, if you want to show up, a lot of people like to bring the product with them. It does something for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I know how that feels. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not knocking it. But if you want to bring building materials, bring them.
Yeah.
You know? They're not going to be turned away, that's for sure. And there's there's enough people out there to cover everything. Bring your know-how, bring your building materials, and just know there's no electricity.
Mm-hmm.
So you might need to bring a generator or something like that, and your blueprints or
uh-huh.
And just be aware there's no Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. You have to go to Facebook Hill or mm-hmm. to the casino to get any kind of coverage. As far as not getting your phone hacked when you're going through the information points.
Mm-hmm.
If you drive by slowly, you'll see they got all their little laser things sitting out. They got license plate readers. I'm sure there's an ISME device because every time I go through, mm-hmm. my phone gets hit. Different things like that. So, you know, follow Facebook, follow the Sacred Stone, get a partner. If you're scared to go out there, anybody wants to come, then contact me through Center Scouts or on my Facebook page, my personal page.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be more than happy to escort. And a lot of people just did not feel comfortable just even coming through the gate.
But they can find Lisa Yellowbird Chase on Facebook and follow you and send you a message.
Yes. And I don't mind that.
Cool.
You know, I'll drive up to the Wi-Fi area, you know, and meet you at a certain point and bring you in if that's what's needed to be done, you know, because everybody needs to experience that. What the press is putting out there is not truthful, you know, at least local,
mm-hmm.
local press.
Well, and that's why we were here to clear it up. Thank you so much for coming on the show. We've run out of time,
you.
But I really appreciate it. I hope you come back because there's so many other things that we need to talk about.
Oh, you do.
Like, yeah. So thank you very much for being here. This is Lisa Yellowbird Chase and Cindy Gomeshemp.
And Duke Gomeshemp.
And you've been listening to A Mexican Crossing Lines. Thank you for listening. Mini Wichoni, Water is Life.